You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
Dave Hodges is as mad as hell, and he's not gonna take it anymore.
I'd like to help you, Doctor, if I really would, but the din in my head, it's too much and it's no good. I'm standing in a window tunnel, shouting through the roar, and I'd like to give you information, asking for more. What blood makes noise? It's ringing in my ear, blood makes noise. And I can't really hear you in the thickening of fear.
Common sense is not so common. This is the Common Sense Show with Dave Hodges.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to hour number two of the Common Sense Show, where we are freeing America, one enslaved mind at a time. This is Dave Hodges, your host. We'll be with you for two more hours. Our show airs every time this Sunday. Every Sunday, I should say, at this time. From 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. on the West Coast and 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. on the East Coast. And we're really glad to bring you what I think are some of the very most knowledgeable people in the country about the challenges we're facing. The purpose of the show is to raise awareness, both for a personal safety and security standpoint, and also so you can make good life decisions, but almost more importantly, so we can collectively save our culture, our civilization, our country. And that's clearly under attack, clearly at risk. Well, this hour we're going to be joined in just a moment by John Lovell, and he is an expert survivalist, although I don't know if he embraces that term, but he is someone who really knows how to survive in confrontational situations, and we're going to be talking about that. But first, as you know, we're sponsored in part by ReadyMadeResources.com and Bob Griswold, who's frequently a guest on this show, and he brings his knowledge of prepper skills and survivability to the airwaves, and his segments when he's on are enormously popular. Some of our YouTube broadcasts, repeats of these shows go through the roof. But Bob wanted to come on specifically tonight and talk about something that happened with regard to a life or death matter that his product was able to intervene and save a life. Bob, welcome to the show, and I'm really glad to bring you on because a lot of what you do, and people don't often think of it this way, is about saving lives. So let's get into it. What happened, and how was a life saved?
Well, again, let's put this in the context of what you and Joe were talking about, is the fact that we see warplanes being shot down. We see Rush Limbaugh and Coulter saying there's going to be a civil war. We say there's going to be, we see shooting of our politicians, another driving attack in London. Joe, this thing is just escalating out of control right now, and the issue is communication and seeing in the dark. Communication. Well, yesterday, my son and I, every year for the last, I think, 5 years, there's a thing called the Chiricahua Challenge, which is a 110-mile bike race, regular standard bicycle that goes through the mountains of Tennessee up to about 6,000 feet. Well, we call what's sagging for it. That means we drive the circuit, and if this biker's getting in trouble, we're using ham radio to communicate to a base station set up. Because cell phones don't work up there. And so we're communicating. If a biker gets in trouble, we can give them a lift out. We can give them water. We have first aid kits. Yeah, that type of thing. Well, as we were going up the mountain at 4,000 feet, there's a place called, East Rattlesnake Outlook. And, as we drove by, there's this gentleman laying on the floor, on the ground. He was been riding a horse and, he fell off his horse and just absolutely split his head wide open. He was semi-conscious. They got him moved out of the road. We weren't the first ones there, but there were other people that had shown up. Cell phones didn't work. Nothing worked. No comm whatsoever. Well, I have their ham radio in my truck. And, the first thing I do is I get on, I get my call sign, Kilo Mike 4, India Echo Quebec, calling base. We've got a condition up here on the mountain. And I called down to the base station, the Sweetwater, Tennessee repeater, W4YJ, and said, told them what was going on. And we started relaying information back and forth. And we were able to get an ambulance up there. This man is in critical condition, from what I understand tonight. We were able to get an ambulance up there. The ambulance people, I guess, took a look at him and looked at him. They decided not to drive him off the mountain. They flew in a LifeStar. LifeStar came right down there, got him. His female acquaintance. I don't know what relationship she was to him, but he had a female with her, with him, and she didn't have any way to call and get family up there. We relayed her contact information down to the base station. They called out to her family. Her family was able to get up there, deal with the horses that were there, and get her off the mountain, I guess, and take care of everything. It just goes to show you how much we appreciate communication, our cell phone and the internet. This thing is going to go down. We are going to lose cell phone and internet one day, and when you do, just as what happened yesterday, it will be the only way to effectively communicate, and you will need it. When we have that failure of civility moment, when we have widespread failure of civility in this country, you're going to need to know where your loved ones are at. You're going to need to know how to get in touch with them. You're going to need to be able to devise a plan, and you're going to need to do it with something that can't be jammed, blocked, or shut down, cell phones and internet. Ham radio is very, very difficult to do that. So first of all, I encourage people to get their ham radio license. It is absolutely essential you get it. You need to practice with it now. So the person who says, I'm just going to buy the radios and use them after the collapse, don't worry about the license. You won't do it because the radios are probably a little complicated today. They're very packed in, a lot of electronics. You need to learn how to use it now. Learn how to use the repeaters. Get to know the people at the ham radio clubs. Collectively, you might have 100 years of radio experience at some of these clubs. So it's a tremendous intel resource dealing with these people. You want to get to know them. They can show you how to use your radios. Great asset to be there. So I just encourage people to do that. And again, you know, we sell all that. I'm glad to help people get set up with ham radio. It will be the only thing that works once this thing breaks apart. And so with that, I think you're going to be listening to John. He's a good friend of mine. I think, you know, his thing as a former Ranger in Battalion 2 is shoot, move, communicate. Shoot, move, communicate, and then own the night. And again, that's what we do with the night vision. Shoot, move, communicate, be able to, you know, tactically move at night, be able to talk when everything else doesn't work. And I'm going to let you go because I tell you, John is a good friend. This guy, I tell you, when I was, he did a 2-day carbine course at our property. The only word I can describe him and his rifle skills are spooky. I mean, he would kill me 20 times before I knew I was dead the first time. I mean, he is that good. He is one of the top shelf instructional shooters in the country, and I think he'll be worth listening to. I know he's going to talk about failure of civility moments tonight, but anybody has a question about that, they can call me at 800-627-3809. And again, we have a special going on tonight for Father's Day on night vision, so you can get a good deal on night vision, and we can set you up with ham radio. We have handheld ham radios that you can pick up, that you can equip you and your loved one with all the necessary gear that goes with it, including a course to take the test, and it's sub $500. So, Dave, I'm going to let you go, but again, 800.
Well, let's go ahead and give out that number again. ReadyMadeResources.com is the website. What's the phone number?
800-627-3809. If people want to call me after the show, I will answer the phone, but I'm telling you, I'd really encourage your guest right now to listen because John will have some good things to say.
Okay, that sounds really good. Well, Bob, thanks for joining us and sharing in this story and just a practical example, not even a cataclysmic example, of how we need to be prepped and ready to respond to emergencies by having some of these necessary tools. Thanks for joining us.
God bless, Dave. Bye-bye.
Okay, if I'm not mistaken, I believe we have John Lovell. John, are you on the air with us?
I'm here.
Oh, good to hear you. Todd, can we give him a little boost on his volume? A little bit faint there. So we just had a friend of yours on, Bob Griswold from ReadyMadeResources.com. And
I caught the end of that. I love that guy. I wanted to hear more of him. That's awesome. But he's gone. Yeah, great, great guy.
Well, we have him on. I have him on as a guest quite a bit just because when some situation breaks out somewhere, he says, Dave, we need to do this, this, and this. I said, hey, you need to come on and tell my listening audience about this. So he's terrific, but he raved about you. He told me, he said he has never seen anyone handle a gun like you do. And by the way, I'm being rude and impolite. Let me just say this. You have a really good YouTube channel. Excuse me. I just went brain dead. Warrior Poet Society, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right?
That's right.
Yeah, Warrior Poet Society. And the demonstrations there are unbelievable. But you specialize in situational awareness. So before we get into what some of those situations are that people need to be cognizant of and you can kind of tell them how they should prepare, What in your background enables you to be considered by people like Bob to be such an expert in this area?
Sure. Yeah. So I'm a soldier at heart. I've always been a fighter. I'm not somebody who really likes violence. I'm not, you know, doesn't follow me. I'm a pretty easygoing, nice guy. You'd never think I was a fighter being around me. I guess I've never been around me. That was the dumbest thing I've ever said. Anyway, I was a wrestler. I was a jiu-jitsu guy. I've been cross-training Krav Maga. I've been fighting a long time. I was in special operations. I've got a bunch of different combat tours to Afghanistan and Iraq, and I've been a professional trainer for a number of years now. And so that's my full-time job, is I travel around the country teaching firearms and tactics.
And to what end do you teach these? Is there a kind of a universal purpose behind your training, or does your training vary according to your audience?
Tactical principles never really change. I try to shoot to whoever I'm speaking in front of. So I've trained an incredible amount of cops, federal agents, military guys, and a lot of civilians, a whole lot of civilians. And that's ramping up more and more. I'm pretty surprised by it. Really, in the last couple of years, I've just been amazed at the amount of civilians that want tactical training. So, so that's been really having to cater to the whole gamut. You have to contextualize the training in terms of what the folks are realistically going to encounter. You know, if I'm teaching room clearing tactics to you, you're not going to have a SWAT team with you ever. In which case, that means you're probably going to be a one or two man element, and the second man is probably not very well trained. So I need something that's going to work under fear, under pressure, stress, that could work well in a low light environment, that you could do all by your lonesome, that would increase your likelihood of survival and winning a fight. So yeah, I've got to take those tactical principles and apply it to the individuals that I have in front of me. And that's just how I make my daily bread.
If let's just take this practically. Someone's illegally and uninvitedly came into your home, and you have a suspicion they're in one of the rooms on the other side of the house, what would you advise someone to do? I myself would probably leave, but if you wanted
leave
to clear the
fantastic.
Room...
fantastic. Yeah, never... first off, even if somebody's a professional room clearer, they got to understand that whoever is stationary and lying and waiting as an ambushing predator has a massive tactical advantage. Think of it like this. If you were out in the woods sitting in a tree stand, and I was going to walk through the woods to find you and kill you, it wouldn't really matter my background. You would spot me way before I spotted you. And similarly, when we enter a room on the hunt for someone who may be down behind a sofa staring, watching for you to, you know, eclipse the threshold, they've already decided they're going to shoot. And you have to find, in law enforcement circles, they call it OODA loop, Boyd's OODA loop, where you have to observe, interpret what's happening, or orient, make a decision, and then form an action. And it's a predictable psychological process that you can't shortcut. Whoever makes it out of OODA loop first usually wins the fight, or at least gets to go first in the fight, which a lot of times dictates the outcome. So yeah, going and kicking in doors or clearing rooms in your own house is generally not a good idea if you can help it. I've got kids on the other side of my house, which means I have to clear. And I'm going to do a lot to ensure that I may be able to overcome the tactical advantages that somebody lying in wait for me may be able to have. If there were no other family members in my house, I can escape out a window, fantastic. But I don't know if somebody else is out there waiting for me as soon as I step outside the door. You know, what if his buddy went around back and one of them entered and there's two outside, or I don't know. So barricading in, I think every floor plan, every family unit needs a security plan that makes a lot of sense for them. And so without seeing your layout and understanding who you are, what your level of training is, what type of guns you brought to the fight, what type of area you live in, family members involved, you know, I can't really tell you right off the gate. I know that's unsatisfying, but going and just trying to clear your house is generally not a good idea right off the bat.
Yeah, I've actually been in a situation like that, and I chose discretion over valor. And I knew someone was in my place. They actually bumped over and hit something. And I think I know I interrupted a burglary in process, and they heard me come in, and they got real, real quiet. I go, whoops, I think I'm going to go out the other way.
And
I did.
Good man.
And I retreated to a neighbor across the street who I was very close friends with. I said, let me in, let me in. I said, I got someone in the house. We called the cops, and they caught them a block away because they went out the back. Figured I was probably going to call law enforcement. But yeah, I mean, in situations like that, when bullets start flying potentially, and I didn't have a gun on me because my gun was put up and I couldn't access it where I was at, I wouldn't have had any chance had they been armed, and I knew that. So yeah, no macho man here. What are some standard things?
Even if you had been armed, what could they have taken in your vacant house that insurance couldn't have replaced?
Exactly. That's right. A lot of times the fights you have are the ones you don't have. Those are the very best ones.
Very good. And I
totally agree with what you're saying there. But in terms of actual protection for your home, you have a standard single family residence. What are some standard things that you tell people that they should consider doing?
Sure. First off, is a lot of folks start kind of at the gun part. Well, you need home defense. Well, let's get a gun. I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. We've got a lot of work to do first. Yay. I appreciate the enthusiasm. And yes, I want to arm up. Let's have good guns that we're well trained with. But first off, is I don't want to be a target in the first place. And there's a lot that you can do to deter somebody from ever even wanting to attack your house. So make sure that you have not kept up with the Joneses. Make sure the Joneses have the best house on the street. Make sure yours has good security lighting, alarm sign, and they'll put a huge dog bowl out front and in the back, even if you don't have a big dog. Beware of dog is good. You know, that kind of stuff to just deter somebody from even picking you as a target as well. Floodlights that activate when somebody walks underneath them, have cameras up with a DVR so that you can detect somebody who may be staking out. All criminals are going to spend some time gathering intelligence. Even the simple pickpocket's going to gather a brief moment's intelligence before they commit a crime. And similarly, a lot of folks are staking out houses in one way or form. We just usually don't know what to look for. So, you know, make sure nobody wants to pick you as a target. Try to interrupt them when they're trying to figure out that you are, you know, try to interrupt their process when they're gathering intelligence on you would be the next thing. And then try to prevent them from ever being able to gain access, even if they wanted to. There's a lot you can do to make sure your doors, you can't kick them open anymore. Man, doors are easy to kick open. I've kicked open so many hundreds of doors in my lifetime. It's quite fun, and not in a nefarious way. I was a door kicker by trade, military, so that's just kind of what I did. I wasn't looting houses in suburbia. But doors are easy to kick open, and doing simple things, you know, having alarm systems and reinforcing key access points, ingress, egress, that's a big deal before they ever even get in the house, so they can't get in. If they do gain entry, now it's time to defend your house, and now having guns can be a real good thing. There.
What do you say to the notion where I've heard a lot that more people, particularly females, are killed with their own gun as opposed to the intruder's gun? Is that a true statement?
I don't know. I've heard that anecdotal wisdom as well. I've also seen that with a lot of cops have been killed with their own guns as well. And I know that's true. I just don't know the percentage or whether it's, you know, I don't know. Just kind of anecdotal wisdom, but still, I guess kind of the common denominator that I'm always having to run on kind of a weekly basis is folks who think it's enough to just go out and buy a gun. And then let's say that they go a step farther and they're the rarity where they're going to actually get training with that gun. Usually what training means for them is kind of shooting Coke bottles off your daddy's fence in the backyard kind of thing. And if you can shoot the Coke bottles off the fence, then man, you're a dead shot. Way to go. And if anybody ever breaks in my house, I'll show them what's up. And typically that kind of shooting is hobbyist, is plinking stuff. It's not actually doing much of anything to make sure you're safe. When I say training, I mean something very, very involved and very technical that's going to allow people to hopefully have their skills to prevail in a fight. But I think it's true, just having that gun, and a lot of folks never really gain the comfort, the understanding of the operation as well. They're scared of the guns. It's something that kind of sits in a drawer in the top of your closet or under your bed in a bedside table or in a safe, and you don't really look at it or play with it or think about it. Yet you haven't really become intimately comfortable with that. You've never tried to shoot under speed and stress before, which is the only time you'll ever shoot defensively. So there's a lot that needs to be tackled in terms of training. And a lot of folks will just go out and buy a whole bunch of guns, 20, 30, 40 guns, and they suck with them. They're terrible. I deal with these guys all the time. They'll have a whole war chest, and they'll go out and they'll do slow aim fire, shooting at static targets under the range with no shot timer, with no stress, and they're not even accounting speed. And then they look at the target, they look at their group and say, that one wasn't bad, had a couple flyers there, but he's dead. And they feel like they've accomplished something in a self-defense, and it's literally an entirely different story. It's an entirely different subject, defensive shooting. So, sorry, I kind of went on a rant there, but you can see I'm impassioned because it's a false sense of security where folks are investing huge amounts of money into guns and ammunition. I mean, you can only shoot one gun at a time, man. Get some training. Just sell 95% of your guns and invest the rest in training and training ammunition.
What would you recommend for training? A place that actually, a gun dealer that actually specializes in training, is that a good place to go? What would you recommend?
Yeah, and be careful about gun dealers as well. I love, gun shops, and that's great, but you got to appreciate what you're going for. If you wanted a car, you may go to a car dealership, and you'd speak to a salesman. He would tell you all about the cars. But his job at the end of the day is to sell you a car. Then there's professional drivers, and they may not know much about the specs on the car. They may not be able to strip it down and build it, but they are very good at racing. That's kind of what a pro trainer does. A pro trainer is a pro driver. They're a pro shooter. They're experts at shooting under fear and very, very small time constraints. So what you want to do is find a professional trainer who starts you off with the end in mind, saying, okay, I've been in fights. This is what a fight is like. You're at A, and I need to get you to Z, and the fastest, most efficient way that I can get you there is by laying out this program. Here, 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 here. Step one, step two, step three, step four. Now let's practice. Ready, and gun. And working you through a realistic training regimen. It's not accidental. It's not, struggling for the word here. I'm thinking extemporaneous, but that's not right. But anyway, it's something that is detailed, it's technical, it's programmed, and it works. Fiercely practical. So that's what you're looking for, and they're scattered around the country. Typically, you're going to have to drive a few hours to find them. But there's a few real key great trainers around the country that I recommend.
Okay. Do you publish a list with trainers nationally? Do you have that available?
I don't. We're always just kind of passing off customers to each other. So okay. It's kind of like the same guys, but you find one, you find us all. So, anyway.
In terms of just home defense and staying with guns for just a moment here, in terms of single-family residents, what kind of guns do you recommend as standard equipment for home defense?
Fantastic. I'm actually talking about this at one of the speakers at NRA's Milwaukee Training Expo. So NRA's having me teach on this exact subject. Training thing in Milwaukee coming up soon. So home defense weapon of choice, I did this on a YouTube video, so I kind of go through all the different hoopla. And kind of how I arrived at it is I wanted to approach it of picking the right weapon for home defense with the weakest shooter in mind, thinking my wife may need to use this. There's a whole bunch of criteria that would go into it from the killing power, the stopping power, for lack of a better term, ammo capacity, the ergonomics, recoil management, accessories for low light, wieldability, how easy is it to maneuver around corners and then thresholds, how accurate can you be without a lot of training, simplicity of operation. That's the kind of stuff of all kinds of different variables. So you could say, for instance, a pistol. People like pistols because they're very easy to conceal in bedside tables, and they feel like this is a 45, and a lot of the 45 caliber crowd will feel like, this is a 45. If I just graze their shoulder, their head will explode because it's such an amazing caliber. They're loving their 45, and I don't want to step on anyone's toes with guns. Maybe I even do. I'm not sure. But there's a lot better options. There's a lot better options for home defense, like for pistol. I tell students routinely of, like, you've heard the expression, never bring a knife to a gunfight, right? You've heard that,
yes,
right?
Yes, I've heard that. Yes.
Great. Never bring a pistol to a long gunfight. Never bring a pistol to a long gunfight. There's a reason why all special operations are carrying AR-15 M4 platforms. There's a reason that's what everyone's clearing rooms with. There's a reason all the SWAT teams are carrying AR-15 or M4 style carbines, right? So if all the top military ops guys and the top SWAT guys they chose, out of all the guns out there, we choose this weapon system, right? That should make us pause a moment and think maybe there's something to that. Pistol, it's very, very hard, even for a pro shooter under speed and stress, to hit something with a high degree of accuracy when the blood is pumping, the fear is flowing, and you're under very small time constraints. It's common that even people who are really good on the range all of a sudden get in a violent encounter and something 5-6 yards away, they fire 6-7 rounds and don't hit anything but air. That's not an uncommon occurrence. Pistols are very hard to be accurate with under stress and small time constraints. And furthermore, they're just not, frankly, very great at stopping the threat, whether it's a 45, 40 or not. And by the way, everyone's flocking to 9mm. They're away from 45. They went to 40 for a while. 40 is out, and now everyone's going to 9mm, just so you know. Shotgun can be a real good option, but you think about your wife, and some of your listeners may say, well, my wife's awesome with a shotgun. I'll say, well, fantastic, more power to you. I love that weapon system, but there's weaknesses of the shotgun as well. I love the shotgun for home defense. That's a great option. However, you got to weigh the weaknesses as well. You don't have a whole lot of rounds. Its wieldability is difficult. It's just pretty long out there. And would your wife have the fighter mindset of after firing a single round to be able to rack a second round? Would she have the fighter mindset to be able to do that? And my answer is, I'm like, I hope so. I don't really know. I hope so. An AR, you just kind of point, you pull the trigger, and you got 30 rounds. Rounds flying 3,000 feet per second. You know, and I like that. I mean, an AR just barely kind of pushes you back. Barely any recoil at all. You can be real fast and accurate. It's intuitive. So I really chose the AR for home defense. That's our go-to. But I really appreciate shotgun folks. Pistol, not as good, but it's a lot better than a frying pan.
Yeah, no question. What about comparing, say, an AK-47 to an AR-15 for what we're talking about?
Sure. I've got an AK within hand's reach right now. Yay, I'm touching an AK right now. Fantastic. yeah, AK is great, too. AK is great. Love an AK. I like a semi-automatic rifle that's very, very reliable. It's intuitive. So AK is great. I like an AR personally. That's what I really train with. An AR, once I mount an AR, it just feels like an extension of me. So, but AKs are great.
Okay, so let's say that John Q. Public and his wife said, you know, things are really unstable in our society. We need to be thinking about getting guns and getting properly trained. So they've listened to the show, and they take your advice. So once they secure an AR-15 or a 9mm or both, how many instances of training, what does the average person typically need? And I know this is a gross average, but typically how much would a person need to where they're going to be proficient enough to where they won't kill themselves or a family member and they'll be able to defend their home?
Gotcha. I bet a lot of your listeners are probably pretty industrious crowd that are going to, they wouldn't come to me needing to say, hey, John, how do you take this thing apart? I'm like, you find out how to take it apart. Don't waste your time and money bringing that question to me. Figure out how to operate the gun. Know your universal firearm safety rules. There's four universal firearm safety rules that we, you know, live by in the pro training community. Those are written in rock. Do not violate the universal firearm safety rules. So have that stuff nailed down so that when you come to me, I don't have to spend a ton of time on safety. Obviously, I'm going to review safety and make sure everything checks out, and we're good to go and continue to remind of that. But I'm just saying I don't want to have to. These are the universal firearm safety rules. So assuming that we can skip some of that stuff and get kind of right down to the nitty-gritty, we got to teach how to zero, basic marksmanship. In one day, in 8 hours, I could transform them and make them exponentially better protectors than they were beforehand. I could probably do more in 8 hours than you could do on your own for 30 years. That's what I usually see. I'll find folks, and that's not just me. That's anybody that has been doing this a while on a professional scene. There's other trainers out there that do great stuff as well. And it's not to say, hey, look at how great we are. It's just typically there's this surplus of weapons out there and this famine of training. And usually I'll say that to folks, and I kind of watch it in their eyes. They don't really know what I mean by it. What I need is that gun to be kind of an extension of you so that when you see a target, everything happens automatic from the mounting of the rifle, the flipping of the safety to fire. All the nice fundamentals are already there, and you're able to take a shot even when you're terrified out of your mind under a very, very small amount of time. Be able to hit your intended target, possibly while you're moving, while they're moving, in and out from behind cover or concealment. And all the weapon manipulation and skill set involved to do that happens on autopilot. But in one day, I could do great amounts. In 2 days, I can start making you pretty dangerous. That's 16 hours. That's a two-day carbine course. In 3 days, we can get to a whole new level. And you become a really dangerous animal, in a good way.
So let's move self-defense away from the home for a minute. Let's assume that we're in a military situation and your community is going to be besieged by foreign troops of some kind, or things are so volatile from civil unrest, you've got to leave. You've got to bug out. How do your weapons needs change versus home defense versus bugging out?
Great. So, for me, you've heard the Bruce Lee said something. I bet you've heard of this before. Don't fear the man with 1,000 kicks. Fear the man who has practiced one kick 1,000 times. Have you heard that?
Yeah, I've heard that. Yes.
Yeah, everybody has. And the same way, don't fear the guy with 1,000 guns. Fear the guy with one gun that's, like, really well used. Typically, I my everyday carry, I'm just carrying a 9mm Glock 19. I carry around. It's just an extension of me. And I get a little Silence 22 I carry with me in a bag everywhere I go. I like the little 22. Because I can carry thousands and thousands of rounds with me, and doesn't take up a lot of space. I'm not like putting it in my pockets or anything. It's just kind of, it's always, you know, kind of at the ready. But I can carry all kinds of ammo. It just doesn't take up a lot of space and it's real light. So I like a little 22, easy to hunt and shoot squirrels and rabbits with. I like that. 9mm is my normal go-to for defense, and then my 5.56, my AR platform. I've got a kind of my favorite one. I've always got with a pretty nice amount of ammo. But those are kind of my guns. That's what I like. I've got a bunch of other guns, but I pull them out and I shoot them every once in a while. But those are my babies. It's my 9, my AR, and it's my little 22. But those are kind of what I'm normally shooting with anyway. So nothing really changes much for bug out.
What about ancillary aspects of this? Let's take night vision. How important is night vision to have for the average person in their home defense or if they have to bug out?
Hard to say. I mean, I need a good bit more context to answer that. I bet none of my neighbors have night vision. I bet very few of my neighbors have night vision, and they're seeming to survive all right. Well, what's my scenario for night vision?
Yeah, let me give you a scenario. Okay, we have an economic breakdown. The country is resource scarce. People are getting desperate. And the reason I ask that is if I was on the side where I didn't have anything and I had to go secure it, I would think my best opportunity would be at night, because night would give me some cover to help escape detection until I actually had to surprise somebody to get their resources. And so in that context, that's how I would ask the night vision question.
Right. Do I have a bunch of people? Am I living in a populated area when this is happening?
Yeah, let's make this an urban, suburban area.
Yeah, that's tough. I'm going to have my night vision on me. I'm trained with it. I know how to use it. My difficulty is like, are you sitting in the darkness of your house pulling security out the windows with night vision all night, rotating in shifts kind of thing? Or how are you leveraging that night vision in this scenario? Sorry, I hate to be a little bit of a dork with this, but the tactician in me is trying to really grasp the scenario, and I feel like I'm not playing ball well right now. I apologize.
No, I understand. If I'm going to ask good questions, if you're going to give good answers, I'm going to ask better questions. Okay, you're defending.
I like night vision and train with it. It gives you a massive capabilities gap. It can give you a massive, massive capability. If you know how to use the tool properly. Night vision is just a tool. It's not a like magical cloaking device, especially in an urban scenario where there's lots of light pollution. The first thing I see, you know, night vision students do is they'll put on their night vision and think, I can see in the dark and now no one else can see me. And that's just not true. You have to learn how to read lighting conditions to understand tactics of low light principles. And if not, it's very easy to get sucked into your night vision, and now a tool that's supposed to give you a dominant advantage is now just going to get you killed. So still, when you need night vision, it all really just comes down to training. It comes down to training. And that's just, everyone's armed to the teeth, look like SWAT operators. I got to snub those 38 special in my pocket dressed in street clothes, and the guy who knows how to press a fight, who understands tactics and who has training, is just going to be able to take everybody out. That's just the nature of the beast. It's training, 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 training. Even with the night vision, it's the tool itself will do some, and it is good to have night vision. I like night vision. You know, I've got night vision, and I encourage others to get it as well. But there's a good bit I want them to have as well. And if you're getting other stuff, with like, first off, get training with just normal guns first. And then if you're getting night vision, great, get night vision. Get a little training with it, too. That's good. Wouldn't take a lot.
John, how do you get training with night vision? I've never heard of such a thing.
Really?
Yeah, you're talking to a novice here, okay?
I can hit a target
coming through my door, and that's all I'll claim to fame. But in terms of, you've said, okay, I would look at the directions of in the box that the night vision came in, and I would hope that I could figure it out from there. I would know of nowhere, without asking somebody, where I could go to get trained on night vision.
Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah, man, there's pro trainers. I've spent a lot of years teaching night vision to SWAT teams and all kinds of military guys and civilians as well. Taking a bit of the break from the tactical night vision game for training temporarily right now. So I would be an example of somebody who did a whole bunch of formal night vision training classes. But there's others around that do it as well.
Someone's listening to us in Denver, Colorado, and they're going, I want to get that 9mm, and I also think an AR-15 is a good idea. I know where I can go get trained, you know, with the guns part of it. But what about the night vision? What would you tell that person? Where would they seek out training for night vision in some metropolitan area?
Well, if they're from Colorado, I've got a pistol and I think a rifle class coming up in Colorado soon. So, hey, man, check out my website and sign up for the pistol rifle courses, and let's get you tuned up some. You mentioned Colorado.
Okay.
I'm like, man, I think I got a few spots left in that class. How about that shameless plug for my website?
Oh, that's good. What is your URL for your website?
Sure. It's warriorpoetsociety.us. And all my training classes are on there. Right now I'm doing pistol rifle stuff. I'll do public speaking that I haven't put on my website yet. Talk about situational awareness and stuff that's really more important, even more important than good pistol and rifle skills, especially in an urban context, is stuff like situational awareness. And it doesn't sound as fun and as sexy, but it's absolutely, and it's a science as well, it's absolutely more important than pistol and rifle proficiency. All of it's important.
Let's talk about that a little bit. We got about, 7-8 minutes left. So let's talk about situational awareness. What can people do immediately on their own to improve their own situational awareness?
Yeah, fantastic. First off is when you're out in public, recognize that as soon as you leave your home to when you get back, you're vulnerable. And typically when we're in transit, we're far more vulnerable than we normally would be. When you're sitting at your desk working, you're not quite as vulnerable as you were when you were getting to your desk or leaving your desk for the day. When we're in transit, we're far more vulnerable. So one thing is when we're traveling around, get your head out of your technology. Head up, shoulders back, look around, and try to find the anomalies in the crowd. Look for threats. And this doesn't mean looking left and right, kind of scanning all paranoid-like. It doesn't mean living a paranoid lifestyle where you think everyone's out to get you. It's just get your head up and look around. What I'm looking for is certain threat indicators. They're predictable. They're easy to see. And once you know what to look for, when you look at security cam footage of preceding any violent attack, it's like you can see it coming 2 miles away, and you're wondering, how does no one notice this? And it's just because people are apathetic. They are idealistic, thinking nothing bad's ever going to happen. And three, they have no idea what to look for. But the signs are all there. So that shallowness of breath, rocking on balls of their feet, bladed stance, dipped chin, for a brow, you know, trying to hide the face, clenched fists, fidgety. And seeing one of these little, and I'm just rattling them off as they come to my head, seeing one of these is really meaningless, but when you can put two or three together, it's really easy to see a bad guy in a crowd. You see bad guys because they'll scan, so will good guys, but the scans of a bad guy look very differently than the way a good guy scans a room. So understanding, oh, that person is scanning. And then you're able to classify good or bad guy, or are they just checking out chicks around them? And so to be able to glance at a crowd, dismiss the 99 who are just doing life, and find the one anomaly that may be a violent threat in just a flash, just a moment. So you're not living paranoid. And also having having an idea of what situational readiness level you should be in. You can't always be in code red thinking 100 ninjas are about to jump out at you. You're just going to exhaust yourself, and you're going to miss the real threats because you're checking out the 98-year-old grandma in front of you expecting her to pull out a knife. You got to be realistic and chill out a little bit and understand what you're actually looking for. But this is a real, real rough introduction to situational awareness, but hopefully it'll at least show someone what they haven't considered before, you know, and really the right place to teach this is in a kind of a formal class. But that's situational awareness.
John, I teach body language as part of my behavioral science classes. I teach post-secondary. And so if we look at this from a body language standpoint, you walk into the mall or shopping center or an athletic event, public event of some kind, what would be some of the very first body language giveaways that would catch your attention to say, I better keep my eye on this person. There's more here than meets the eye.
Well, you teach the stuff. You tell me. What do you got?
Yeah, but I don't do it from a situational awareness standpoint. I will tell you this.
Sure.
Someone who's dressed out of place for the environment that they're in. In other words, they're hiding weapons of some sort. So maybe on a hot 90-degree day, they've got a coat on. That's something that would catch my attention. Someone who appears to be just hanging out and stalking, where they're really gathering intelligence for the scene. Those were some things that have gotten my attention in the past, and it's caused me to kind of reroute where I'm walking.
That's great. Their heads may be slightly oriented toward the ground, and they'll do quick left and right scans that seem more jumpy, not the smooth scans left to right that are unhurried that a good guy would do.
I look for rigidity in their body language. It's out of place. Most people, when they're at the mall or they're at some event, they're fitting in. Their body language is calm. They're composed. They don't have the furrowed brow. They're not tense in their movements. And when I would look at someone who might not fit in that body language sequence, kind of a gross body language analysis, I would say that's the kind of person that would also catch my attention.
That's great. And let's talk for a moment about, and I know we're almost out of time, why this is important. The difficulty is bad guys are ambush hunters. They're crocodiles waiting on the bank of the river for an unsuspecting doe to come take a sip. Now, if the deer recognizes the crocodile in advance, it can easily prance away to safety, no harm, no foul. But once the crocodile is in proper position and once it launches its attack, it's all over for the deer. There's very little it can do to survive. Similarly, a bad guy is an ambush predator. That means they'll catch you when you're least suspecting it, unaware, and overwhelm you with so much force, aggression, and chaos that even somebody who's, you know, got a couple belts under him in Taekwondo is probably just going to get utterly owned. You take a pretty incredible amount of martial arts training or gun training. A lot of folks, even that carry guns, they're very, very slow with them. They've never really been trained on how to quickly draw from concealment and put accurate shots on target. So what it means is when a bad guy catches you unaware, you have no time. You have no time left. And it doesn't matter whether you had 10 guns in your glove box. You're not, it might as well be 1,000 miles away. You can't get to them in time. Doesn't matter you have a gun in your purse. They already took your purse. Now they're pointing a gun at you. You're out of time. Your stress is through the roof, and you're doing all you can to just not faint in horror. And that's part of it. We all like to think that we're going to turn into Jason Bourne and karate chop to the throat and disarm. But, you know, one thing I think history would prove to us is we don't rise to the occasion. We fall to our lowest level of training. There's that word again, training.
I would agree with you. As someone who coached sports for many, many years, I would totally agree. Competition tends to bring out your lowest level of training. That's a very, very good way to put it. I will tell you this. If I'm walking on the streets of London, I'm walking across traffic. In other words, traffic's coming at me. I'm not crowding the sidewalk, and I'm looking for the guy who's not driving straight. I don't know if you heard about that latest attack, but you know, and we're so vulnerable when we walk on the sidewalk that these terrorists from France to London have found, hey, this is an effective way to kill people and drive the terror message is just to drive up on the curb and start mowing people down.
Yep. Absolutely. Yep.
Well, it's crazy. Well, anyway, we just got a minute left, and I wanted to once again thank you for coming on. I'd like you to give out your website one more time, as well as your YouTube channel.
Sure. I'm easy to find on YouTube. Type in my name, John Lovell, or type in Warrior Poet Society or Warrior Poet, and I'll come right up on YouTube. My website is warriorpoetsociety.us, and you can check out my training classes that I've got all over the U.S. They're filling up fast, just filled up Virginia. But anyway, yeah, check it out.
Okay, look, I really appreciate you joining us, and I'm glad you're one of the good guys on our side, because I heard from our mutual friend Bob Griswold just how well you shoot. So thanks so much for joining us and being part of the good team. Look forward to talking to you again.
Likewise, thanks.
Okay, John Lovell, ladies and gentlemen. And that was, to me, that was interesting, because I am thinking about situational awareness. I am thinking about home defense, and I am thinking about bugging out. Why? Just look at what the left is doing. Do you think they're ever going to give us a moment's peace? I don't think so. Well, anyway, in the next hour, we're going to be joined by Sheila Zielinski, and Sheila's always got timely stuff to talk about. Stay with us, and we'll see you in hour number 3.